In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with nutrition coach Jeff Hone. Jeff and I speak about 9 things that impact our hunger and how to tackle those to stay more consistent in our weight loss phase. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Jeff, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Jeff. Hello and welcome to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with fellow podcaster and coach Jeff Hone. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great job with pronouncing the last name right, too. I don't know about you, so being a fellow podcast host, whenever I ask somebody their last name and then, you know, I like know it off air. And then when I click record, it's like, for whatever reason, I just end up like messing it up. I don't know if that's here or what. So great job.
Definitely has happened to me as well in the past. So Jeff is a fellow coach, as I mentioned. He helps men and women build muscle and lose body fat. So essentially, you're a recomp coach. I love that definition here. And I just love to hear a little bit more about you, your background, what brought you to where you are today.
Yeah. First, I don't think I mentioned this, but thanks for having me on. Super excited. Like we said, you're going to be coming on my podcast as well, too. So definitely looking forward to you interviewing me, and then I'll obviously interview you. But yeah, as far as my background goes, so, you know, I've always kind of been into sports, right? So that was kind of where I first got into working out. But, you know, I would do some lifting. I like started out with like doing, basically my dad had these dumbbells and I would just do some like curls and like push-ups, you know, just trying to show off those types of muscles. So that's where I first kind of got into working out. That was probably in my early teens. But you know, then it just became something where, you know, I'm a short guy, so I wanted to like, couldn't do anything about my height. So I was like, well, I can at least, you know, build some muscle, potentially. And so, you know, that's what really made me want to continue, to do that after sports. I actually graduated with a bachelor's in just business. So nothing to do with like fitness or nutrition or anything like that. But when I got out of, remember, like towards the end of that, I was kind of like thinking about doing something fitness related, but I'm like, all right, I'm almost done with this business degree. So, you know, I might as well just continue, you know, with that. And so when I got out of college, I actually was a gym manager. I was assistant manager at first with like this local chain gym. And, you know, it was cool because I was able to work in the fitness industry, work in the gym environment, but it was more so like sales and just kind of keeping up with the gym, right? Didn't really do anything with like clients or anything like that, right? And I always told people, you know, I remember I would sign people up and then you'd have this like great conversation with them and, you know, they're ready to go. And then like 2 weeks later, you'll never see them again, right? So I was like, man, this freaking sucks. And, you know, I just wasn't something that was like fulfilling me. You know, I just knew I wanted more. So I had this crazy idea to decide, you know what, I'm going to drop this and I'm going to actually work with personal training clients. And so I started as an in-person trainer back in like 2016, 2017. I did that for a few years, kind of started the online thing on the side and just kind of always chug clients to that. And just kind of grew from there. And I'm now full-time online, as you said, you know, working with clients, you know, from a body recon standpoint. You know, I like to really focus on health as well too. I think that's super important. Like obviously the aesthetic side of things is important, but then the, you know, the health side of things is also something that I, you know, really try to focus on, because I'm sure, as you know, it's like that is, you know, sometimes overlooked. And I think it's super important. But as far as like my fitness journey, what I do, same thing, you know, I just want to build muscle. You know, that's kind of my main kind of thing that I focus on. Competed in a few bodybuilding shows in the past. It's been a while. I got marked down for not being lean enough. One of my judges told me I was soft. So I was like, okay, well, that's, you know, interesting. But you kind of have to separate yourself, you know, that's not really real life. So yeah. And now that's what I do, you know, is still like, it was, you know, aesthetics at first, but for me now it's like, obviously still want to build muscle, but it's also, it anchors my day. I feel good. You know, I don't feel great when I don't train. So, you know, it's more so for that now than aesthetics, but, you know, obviously the aesthetics are a nice kind of side as well too. So.
Well, thank you for sharing a bit about yourself. And I can absolutely relate to the thing of you just feel better when you work out. I often hear when I'm traveling and people ask me, oh, you even work out when you're on vacation or whatever. I'm like, Yeah, I feel so much better about the rest of my day if I do. And it's just once it's part of your routine, it's just part of your routine. If you don't do it, it's like suddenly saying, don't brush your teeth for 10 days. And you're like, oh, this feels disgusting after day two, sort of thing. So, yeah, I totally hear you. And I love that you're focusing on aesthetics and combining that with health as well. And the beautiful thing is that most of the time they kind of go hand in hand. Well, not necessarily, but often once we start our health and fitness journey, we automatically also feel better, even though we might have initially started with the focus or emphasis on aesthetics. And so, since you are a quote unquote recomp coach, obviously guiding a lot of people through fat loss, I'd love to talk a little bit about hunger because, of course, hunger is one of the main determinants of why we adhere or don't adhere to a diet or a style of eating long term. Of course, there's also social reasons and emotional reasons and whatnot. But just in general, what are some things that perhaps impact our hunger and prevent us from sticking to our diet?
Yeah, well, this is an interesting topic for sure. Hunger's definitely an interesting one. I always tell people that hunger's kind of the cost of doing business, right? When it comes to fat loss, unfortunately, I think obviously we're going to do things to mitigate hunger as much as we can, but I always say if you're not ever a little bit hungry in a fat loss phase, you're probably not losing as much body fat, right? So it's kind of walking that fine line of having some hunger, but also we don't want it to be to the point where you're just ravenously hungry either, right? Because somebody could hear this and then be like, all right, well, I'm just not going to eat anything, and that's a way to also make yourself super hungry. And I don't know if this is something you see, but I do feel like a lot of people that try to diet for fat loss, it is in this like pretty, they want kind of quick results, so you'll see them maybe under eat, or you just kind of see a lot of holes with like nutrition, and maybe they almost undereat for short periods of time, and that can kind of come and bite them later on. And so, again, I think it's like I said, walking that kind of fine line with hunger, but understanding that it is going to be part of the equation. And again, it's just kind of the cost of doing business. So it's like, I think always kind of setting those expectations with it, I think, is super key because I think too many people try to, they're not. We're not comfortable with being hungry in today's world. It's something that a lot of people just they're just not comfortable with because we don't really it's just not something that really happens anymore, right? There's food all everywhere all the time, so we don't ever really have to deal with it. I think a lot of people that's kind of their default setting. Anytime they get a little hungry, it's like they want to eat. I don't know if this happens to you a lot, but when like somebody's in a fat loss phase or something, they're always like, oh well, I have like an apple or something to for when I get hungry, and I'm kind of like, that's good. I like that. I think that's like a good thing to do. But I also don't, what I don't like is that anytime you feel hungry, you feel like you need to eat something, Is that something that you kind of see as well too,
I
or?
absolutely see that in clients as well, where and like I get that because of course it is a physiological instinct. Like right away, our body is it helps us survive by us listening to that instinct. But just like you say, like reframing that as actually something, hey, what I'm doing is actually working. I am actually burning more calories than what I'm intaking. This is good. I'm just gonna acknowledge this feeling and then move on and know that my next proper meal is coming up in 2 hours. I'm not actually in any danger. I'm not actually needing to go out and hunt whatever or collect some berries.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I feel like a lot of times this comes from like what maybe people don't have like a consistent eating schedule or whatever it is. So I really like to, one of the big things I like to do is get a consistent, fairly consistent eating time. I'm not saying you need to eat at 2:11 every single day or whatever, but having a pretty consistent like meal time, I think, can be helpful because, if you have that and you are getting a little hungry, it does two things. One, it gives you that like, okay, hey, I'm going to be eating here in the next couple hours, right? I can or next hour, so I kind of know when that next meal is coming. But the other thing it does too is, so there's that. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought, but it does that. But it also, I think, helps make sure that you have these full meals and you can stay consistent, from that standpoint. So I do like to have clients kind of have that like kind of consistent, meal timing, in a fat loss phase. So,
And
but
I think
yeah.
like having sorry to interrupt, but I do think like having or thinking about meal timing and meal frequency ahead of time, and I assume you also work with macros and so on. I mean, it just helps ensure that you're actually hitting your targets by the end of the day. If you're just saying like, oh, okay, you know, I'm eating whenever and I don't really know what my next meal will be or when it is, then chances that you're actually hitting your protein, that you're within your overall calories by the end of the day, not over or under, are so much higher. Like if we plan for something, I mean, it's just like with financial things. If you plan for how much you want to save or when you're going to spend what, chances that at the end of the day you're achieving your saving goals or whatever are so much higher than if you're just, oh, like whatever, here and there.
Yeah, and you end up, I feel like if you kind of do it that way, you end up kind of playing that kind of macro kind of Tetris game at the end of the day too, right? And that could, you end up having these like really weird meals where it's like, well, I need like 20 grams of or 10 grams of protein, 35 grams of, you know, and that could be a challenge. So yeah, I think it helps with that too. And I think there's some research that kind of shows that fairly consistent meal timing can like make a small impact on like total daily energy expenditure as well too. So just, you know, staying consistent with that. That's one thing that, you know, that's not going to make or break, you know, say a fat loss phase or anything like that. But, you know, I think when we're in an energy deficit, you know, aiming for fat loss, I think anything that can help with energy expenditure, you know, we want to try to put in our favor, you know. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of having that consistent timing there. But yeah, so as far as hunger goes, again, I think I always like to say that first because, again, we want to understand that, hey, there's going to be some hunger involved in fat loss, but our goal is to try and minimize that as much as possible. So one thing that can impact your hunger is too much activity, but also, you know, too little activity as well too. So too much act. So, you know, I think with fitness, you know, people talk about like, you know, getting into fitness, you know, it's it, a lot of times they people think that more is better, right? And to an extent, right? I mean, for people that are not moving at all, yes, you know, we obviously want to move more, but there's also, and probably more so people that listen to this podcast and that would listen like my podcast that might move a little bit too much, right? You know, they're into exercise, they enjoy, you know, working out. And so for them, they may end up moving a bit too much. And that's going to be something that can impact your hunger. But
I
also
think,
on
sorry, just to throw in there, I think that's a really, really good point, and I totally applaud people that want to be active most of the time. Like I like standing as well and going for walks and stuff. But I think what we need to take into consideration there is the intensity matters so much, right? Like there's nothing against going for frequent walks or being active in your household and so on. Like that's very clear in the research also, that that is quite beneficial also for blood sugar management and whatnot. But essentially we don't want to do you know, cardio in the morning and then your strength training in the afternoon, and then it adds up to like 12 hours in the gym in a high intensity state and never coming down.
well, and I think too, this comes from a place of, like you said, I mean, exercise is great. We want to promote that for sure. But I think this comes from a place of, you know, thinking that again, the kind of more movement you do, it's just going to kind of improve your fat loss results, right? And I think that's, you know, where maybe that this advice can kind of, you know, go wrong. And so, like you said, it's also intensity as well there. But and so I think the big thing is just being aware of that, right? Of like, let you know, explaining to the client that, hey, you know, this is great that you want to be active, and generally this is a good thing, but just understand that this may lead to a little bit extra hunger because you're just expending so much energy there, which in turn can lead to maybe a little bit more calories being consumed over time. But you know, and from my understanding, there's a kind of a concept called exercise energy compensation, and this is kind of more pronounced in deficit, right? Meaning that on paper, you think that just adding more exercise would just add to your total daily energy expenditure for the day, but there might be a little bit of compensation elsewhere throughout the day as you kind of get to these higher levels of energy expenditure. So it's not like you're always just adding it. There might be, you might be doing this extra working out energy expenditure, and you might not, you know, get your full return on investment there. So just being aware of that, I think that's the biggest thing is being aware of that. But like I said, on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have too little activity. And that can also, you know, impact your hunger as well too. You know, not moving enough can mess up your kind of appetite regulation, right? And that would be something that can cause you to consume more calories. So I think kind of finding that sweet spot of, hey, you're moving enough, getting enough energy expenditure for overall health. Like you said, you also have like blood glucose regulation, you know, for moving. You know, that's going to be helpful there. I find that kind of around that 8 to 12K step per day, right? I think for some people you can go a little bit higher, but I think that 8 to 12K seems like kind of the sweet spot there from a movement, standpoint. And then just kind of watching, how your hunger is, how you respond to that. So yeah, that's kind of how that's the first one there is too much activity, but also too little.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that 10 to 12,000 step sweet spot. I think anything over that is unattainable. And like you just said, often your body also just adapts so quickly to what we're doing. So if we're adding more and more cardio in the form of that sort of low intensity activity, your body's super quickly gonna adapt to that. And it's not gonna matter in the terms of in terms of burning energy. So yeah, I like that just overall. For me, I think it's practical as well. Like that's attainable even if you build up, if you start with someone who might get 2, 3,000 steps a day. Which happens very often when people come to us, often like someone with a sedentary job, they just drive to work, they do a few steps around the grocery store, and that's about it. So they might only have 2 to 3,000 steps a day, and then working up to, if you tell them 12,000 straight away, it's like, whoa, no, that's not going to happen. But building up slowly, like with everything, yeah, absolutely attainable.
Well, and then there's the time aspect of it, right? That's the other thing we need to consider here. I mean, if you don't have a lifestyle that, kind of you just naturally link steps, getting over 12,000, that's a pretty big time commitment, as well too, right? And that can be not very practical for some people, and that can be just an added stressor, as well too, on top of already trying to diet. So I think finding that sweet spot is key. But like you said, we don't want to be like, oh, don't exercise, because that obviously is important. It's just kind of watching that, finding that kind of sweet spot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, what other tips do you have in terms of keeping hunger at bay?
So another one that can kind of impact hunger is going to be poor sleep. This is one that, sleep can disrupt hormones like ghrelin, right, which is kind of your hunger hormone. And so, by getting, when you don't get great sleep, that can be something that can impact, your hunger the following day. Not only that, but it also, I think poor sleep's also going to kind of impact your just overall kind of motivation, your overall just decision making. You're just probably not going to make as good of choices. So sleep's a big one. I think that's one that, people hear and they kind of just overlook, but it really is something that I think needs to be worked on, especially in a fat loss phase. So that's just the hunger side of things, right? I think poor sleep also may not be great from the overall body composition standpoint, as well. So, paying attention to that. I think with the sleep though, it's like, okay, so what do I do? Like, how do I know I'm getting poor sleep? And like, how do I actually get better sleep? Because I think that's a big thing. Because I think a lot of times, like, oh, well, I just need to spend, 8, 9 hours in bed. And well, I agree that, if you're getting like 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night, you probably want to bump that up a little bit. But again, from a time standpoint, it's like not everybody has time to sleep, nine plus hours. So I think it's less about getting more sleep unless you're getting fall like on the really low end side of things. And yes, you do probably need to do that, but it's more about improving that quality of sleep, where I see people who kind of improve more. And I think one, it's just prioritizing it first. Like, hey, you have that option to stay up and watch another episode of Netflix or on Netflix or go to sleep. Hey, you probably want to fall asleep, or at least try it and get some rest, right, at that point. But I think some other big things would be like a consistent sleep routine and staying fairly consistent with your sleep and wake times. I think that's a big thing that you can do there. Limiting caffeine throughout the day and like how late you have it in the day, I think can be a big thing there. And then screen time before bed is another big thing there. But just making sure you're not like in the bed just sitting on your phone and scrolling, right? I think that's a big one. And again, just other kind of sleep hygiene tips of like keeping the room nice and cool, dark. Those can go a long way. But I think those first three are like the big ones that if people start to focus on that, like we'll see big kind of return on investment perspective.
Yeah, I used to really never pay attention to sleep until I did some shift work for a while, and that
Oh, yeah.
completely threw off my circadian rhythm. And so then afterwards, I had to work really, really hard to just get somewhat of a regular sleeping pattern again. And I will be honest, I still struggle with sleep from time to time, but what I have now a pet peeve with is basically phones in the bedroom, as you mentioned. It's just like that's an absolute no-go for me. I charge it in a different room to just overcome my own I want to touch my phone first thing in the morning and last thing at night. So I mean, we're all human. We are all falling for those dopamine hits and so on. But I just if I can give someone or anyone listening out there one recommendation that is really working on that, and like of course it's gonna require some self-restraint and it's not gonna be as fun as you wake up and you check whatever you want to, but in the long run, you're definitely gonna benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean that's one that like I'm just shocked whenever I talk to clients about sleep. I'm like, if they maybe feel like they haven't been sleeping well, and I ask them, like, are you on your phone before bed? And I feel like most times they're like, yeah, I actually am. I'm like, man, that's crazy how many people are. And it really can, impact your sleep there. But another one that I think is like super important that maybe people overlook is the consistency of the sleep times as well too. Like I said, you don't necessarily need to like go to bed and say 10:30 on the dot every night, but we probably don't want that to shift, too far away. I think like in the research, I think it's like maybe more than like 2 hours, I think is kind of what you want to be careful with.
Max,
So so
yeah, I think so, yeah.
yeah. So try not to let it be, where that pops up the most probably is on the weekends, right? Where you got an inconsistent schedule during the week, and then on the weekends you're, going to sleep at, say, you normally go to sleep at 10, and then you're like going to sleep at like 1, and then you don't wake up till like 9, and that's where I think it can impact you the most. So trying to stay consistent with that, but also just getting outside, getting some sunlight throughout the day can be helpful. And trying to get outside and getting sunlight as early as you can also kind of help with your circadian rhythm. So another kind of one there to out from perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I was listening to a podcast the other day with Matthew Walker. I don't know if you're familiar with him or his book, Why We Sleep. Anyone listening out there, please read it. It's amazing. But he was basically saying, and like it never occurred to me until then, but he was basically saying that almost everybody on the weekends goes to bed a little bit later, sleeps in a little bit longer, and then you wake up Monday morning and you just hate your life because because you're like you have to get up early again. And essentially, we all give ourselves a jet lag or a daylight savings time or whatever once a week. And like if that happens once a year globally, because your country has decided it does so, everyone gets really upset and, oh, I hate it and this is so dumb. But
Yeah.
technically, you do that every single week to yourself. So,
Yeah.
like even on the weekends, I would say like try to stay within like 30 minutes or whatever of
Yeah.
your usual time.
Yeah. I think the closer you can stay to it, the better. There, it's just, I think it can be a challenge. I totally understand. Like sometimes I struggle with that. It's like, oh man, I don't have to be up early. I don't want to stay up a little bit longer. But again, like you said, if you do it every once in a while, where maybe you're staying up a little bit later, it's like, okay, it's not a big deal. And then maybe most of the time it's like 30 minutes, you're fine. So I think it's not like one time's gonna completely screw you up, but the more often you do it, the more it's gonna impact there. So
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. Yeah. What other things might
yeah.
impact our hunger in a dieting phase or just in general?
Yeah. So high stress is gonna be another one, right? High stress that, really isn't managed, right? You just have a ton of stuff going on. You're not managing it. That's going to be one that can lead to, hunger for probably more higher calorie, more comfort type foods, more calorie dense type foods. And so, I think for some, I do think this is dependent on the person. I know some people that they get stressed and they like don't want to eat, but then you have people that get stressed and they do really want to eat. And I think that just comes down to probably your habits, what you've just done in the past. But from my understanding, anytime we are under higher amounts of stress, and again, that stress isn't managed, it's going to lead to you wanting more tastier food in general, right? Like when you're super stressed, you probably don't want your kind of quote unquote health foods like fish, rice, broccoli. You probably you don't want that. You want like pizza or something like that. Again, we, all about having some of that stuff from time to time, but this can be something that can, lead to you wanting more of these types of foods, and in turn can lead to a higher hunger level. So, trying to work on stress management. It's not that we don't want any stress, but we want to make sure we're doing some things to kind of get out of that kind of flight or fight or flight state. Kind of get out of your head for a little bit. So things like some sort of mindless exercise, taking deep breaths throughout the day. These are all things that we can kind of work on there, and then just finding things that you enjoy that get you out of your head. I think as we get older, we have so many responsibilities that you kind of lose sight of, like doing things that you actually enjoy and bring joy to you, right? It's all just kind of work, like work, take care of this, take care of that, and then do it all over again. And we just kind of get in this routine of that. We don't actually do any hobbies that we, really enjoy, So making sure you do things like that. Any sort of like creative work, like I said, breath work can be helpful. Listening to relaxing music. Hey, sometimes maybe it is watching a TV show that you really enjoy. Just something like that. Making sure you take time to do that from time to time. I'm just gonna see too many people that are just always go go go, and they're always stressing about the next thing. And so making sure you take time for that. So stress is another one that can lead to some hunger there. So.
Yeah, some really good points there. And I think it's so interesting the research that's coming out or that has been published about even just our perception of stress, what sort of impact that has on our physiological response, right? If we think something is a good stressor versus a bad stressor, our body's gonna respond completely different, and we're gonna it's going to determine whether it's essentially inflammatory or not inflammatory for us. So as you said, working on that mindset and just working on how you perceive something, like if something is upsetting you in traffic, just deciding that it's not gonna bother you because you can't do anything about it anyway, or that fight with your boss is not that important anywho because you were gonna quit. Anyway, so those sorts of things.
Well, and I think with anything like that too, I think the biggest thing is, you are not like if you're not doing things that you enjoy too, then you are probably going to continuously kind of be in your head about it as well too. So making sure you do that. And I always tell clients too, it's not that we want to avoid all stress. It's just like, trying to work on those kind of extra unnecessary stressors that just kind of pop in. Like you said, you gave a good example there of like traffic or something like that, right? It's like, all right, you know what? I'm actively trying to work on managing my stress. This is probably one thing that if I just take a deep breath, take two or three deep breaths, like, okay, it's not that bad. I'm not going to let this be something that's going to also add to all the stress I have because it's just a vicious cycle. Which, I'm sure it can be that can be a tough thing, to break. But I know for me personally, doing some sort of like kind of breath work meditation daily has been super helpful with that. I think it's something that I haven't realized how big of a role it has played for me in terms of like, it allows me to just kind of, when things like that do happen to me, I can kind of like take a step back and like see what's going on versus just like reacting to everything, right? So,
Exactly.
that's
Yeah,
why I'm
it's wonderful when you catch yourself for the first time, just having more that observer, bird's view perspective, as opposed to just responding to something straight away. One other thing I was going to touch on is you mentioned some people they don't eat when they're super stressed, and I certainly have clients like that. I'm one of the other from the other end who, when I'm stressed, I want to eat more and more and more. But just generally speaking, I have several clients that. I don't want to say they forget to eat, but they just can't eat during that time, or they tell themselves they can't eat. And I don't think that that's any better than the overeater either, because you don't like it's not helping you deal with the stress, your body deal with the stress. So often in those situations, I do still recommend, like, I know you don't feel like eating right now, but how about you just make yourself a smoothie and you zip on that? If it's all that you can get down, and you can put in peanut butter, protein powder, and banana, and that's super easy to digest. I guarantee most people's digestion is going to tolerate that, because I do recognize that our digestive system is not switched on when we're in that super stressed straight state. So I understand that. But if it's some very easy things, or white rice with whatever, some tuna, it's not going to be that hard to digest.
Yeah, no, that's a great point you bring up. Yeah, finding something like you said, like a smoothie or something like that. And off of what you just said there, like that can be problematic. For one, like you said, you're not obviously eating food, you're not getting nutrients in that you need, and everything like that. But I've also seen that backfire on people where they don't eat for maybe a short period of time because they're stressed, and then all of a sudden they're put in an environment where there's like a ton of food around, or they just naturally get hungry, the next day because I mean, let's face it, no matter what, how stressed you are, if you're not hungry during that time. I feel like the body is smart and it always kind of works its way around, right? And that leads to, you consuming extra calories like later on, right? Down the line somewhere. And again, it's probably because there's some sort of event that's coming up and you're just around that type of food and it's usually calorie dense food. So that's another way that can, impact you too. Somebody who doesn't, like to eat their stress.
Very, very good point. Yeah, it almost always boomerangs back. It might not be immediately, but as soon as we start relaxing, most of the time those hunger cues skyrocket then. But is there anything else that impacts our hunger?
I have a few more too, and a few of these we've hit on. But another good one here is calorie dense foods. These are foods that are high in calories but low in volume. Again, these types of foods, just think of I like to think of these as like, you know, your kind of tasty, snacky type foods. You know, there's a spectrum of calorie dense foods, but on the really extreme side of things, you know, we're looking at foods that don't have a lot of like food volume. It's just a little amount of food for how many calories are in it, right? I always, my favorite example of this to just kind of put this home is like two Oreos, a serving of two Oreos versus like a serving of chicken breast, right? You know, which one's like one has a lot more protein, it's got a lot more food, and the other one has, you know, it's two small little cookies, right? They have the same amount of calories. And it's like, okay, which one's going to, you know, keep you feeling full throughout the day? So, you know, if you have a good chunk of these types of foods in your, like, say, fat loss diet, you may be adhering to the calorie amount, but you might have a harder time in the long run because these foods aren't satiating. They're not providing you with the, you know, vitamins and minerals that you need. They're probably lower in fiber, lower in protein. So calorie dense foods can be another, you know, big kind of trigger here. It's, again, I would never be like, hey, don't ever have any of these types of foods, but it's just like, hey, we need to get a good base of whole foods, you know, foods that are a little bit more nutrient dense, a little bit more food volume. Then, you know, we can sprinkle in some of these more calorie dense foods. However, and again, I feel like probably people that listen to this may fall in this extreme at times too, where over food volume things can also, you know, lead to some issues as well too. So again, it's striking that balance here, but too many calorie dense foods, I do think, and I mean, it is something that, you know, can lead to just more craving for that food, and we're just going to have higher hunger as well too.
Yes, so I like that you mentioned the other side of the coin too, but you're absolutely right. I think the interesting thing is this often even if macros and even fiber is equated for, let's just say you have a protein bar, and there's some fiber in there as well, versus like you said, your chicken breasts and maybe some berries and broccoli and whatever, that is gonna satiate you much longer than the protein bar. So if you're in a dieting phase and you're thinking, I am hitting my macros, I'm not actually eating any of these quote unquote dirty foods or whatever, why am I still so hungry? Then you can still overthink that. Or even if it's small switches like a wrap or bread, there's literally nothing wrong with a wrap or bread. I consume both of those on a regular basis. But again, if you're thinking about why am I so hungry? How can I be less hungry? Maybe you want to try switching that for some oats or for some potatoes or some of these other really, really satiating foods. But yeah, like you said, I have also seen people really overdo it, especially if they're like prepping for to be pretty lean, like almost stage lean or so, and where we get to a place of it is gonna get very hard. And one of my clients, we hit a plateau, and we were trying to pinpoint why, because it she should have lost weight where we're at, and it turned out that she ate 3 packets of gum. So I mean, each piece of that has like had 3 calories or whatever, but there's 20 in each package. And you might argue, yes, that's sugar, alcohols, and blah blah blah, but still, it's gonna lead to bloating. It's probably gonna digestive system. Or I've seen like people ha having 3 bowls of iceberg lettuce with this quote unquote zero calorie dressing, and they thought that those 3 bowls had like 20 calories in total. Well, it's still going to mess up your digestive system and lead to bloating, and therefore slow down your overall motility in the gut. So yeah, very, very good point.
Well, and I think it all stems back to, you know, kind of what we talked about initially with like really trying to avoid hunger, right? It's like people want to avoid it so much that they'll kind of go to these extremes. And like I said, it's like it's just going to be the cost of you know, some hunger is just going to be the cost of you know, of doing business. And you know, you brought up the kind of extreme example of like prep. Like you're going to get pretty lean for that, and it's like, you know, that to get that lean, it's like you're not going to not experience any hunger. Right. So it's like, again, it's kind of accepting that on there. But yeah, no, I know gum for me is a big one where like I never like put two and two together, but for me, I just don't chew gum anymore at all because anytime I have gum, it really does mess with my gut. So I think it, you know, it's dependent on the person, but like, you know, I especially 3 packs, man, I would be hurt psychologically like, and I think too with food volume, one other thing on this too is, you know, you can only, like we said, from a GI standpoint, like there's that, but at the same time, you know, calories still do matter, and you know, you could over food volume to the point to where it's like you could have, you know, say 500 calories of broccoli, and it's like yeah, you might feel full because you've had all that broccoli, but you also only had 500 calories, you know? So it's like, you also, you know, you still do need to get some calories in, right? Like that's going to be part of the equation. So you can't just like pack your way, you know, fully to you know, getting rid of hunger. So yeah.
Yeah, totally. And with that, I do think sometimes it is actually important to play a little bit with that your current mealtime or food volume as well. So sometimes I see people, they don't eat any proper meals. It's like a 200 calorie breakfast, and then they have two mid-morning snacks, and they have a 300 calorie lunch, and then two 100 calorie afternoon snacks. And then, like, why don't we just make that? There's nothing wrong with snacks. I love snacks, literally, but have some proper meals at the end of them, feel somewhat satiated, not full, but somewhat satiated. And then move on to your next meal as opposed to constantly, I call it grazing, because that's literally what it is. You have a little bit of here, a little bit of there, and it's not good for your blood sugar regulation and definitely also not for your perception of hunger. So I would recommend if you're struggling with hunger, just overthink your meal timing and maybe see if you want to tweak something.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, that kind of grazing, just not having like full meals, man, that really does impacts, you know, hunger. And that's a big thing. I wonder if, I feel like it stems back from the like kind of the myth of like, oh, hey, you need to eat, you know, smaller meals throughout the day. And yeah, no, that's a big one that I see where people just, you know, really struggle you know, with that. And that's why I'm a huge fan of, hey, let's really push, you know, full meals here, have these full meals, because that's been something for me that's been a huge game changer in terms of managing hunger. So a couple other ones I have too are, you know, just fat loss dieting in general, right? So obviously, you know, as you drop more weight, you know, as your deficit gets larger, the longer you do that, this is going to impact your hunger levels as well too, right? So again, this kind of comes back to the concept of just, you know, this is the cost of doing business. So fat loss dieting in general, being in that energy deficit is going to increase hunger. So some things we could do here would be like utilize some things like refeeds and diet breaks from time to time. So taking some time away from fat loss dieting within the fat loss phase. And then also making sure that you're losing at a rate that, you know, you can adhere to is also going to be important. And then obviously combining some of these other things we talked about here can all be things to kind of manage hunger during a fat loss dieting, but understand that, you know, when you're fat loss dieting, it's going to impact your hunger. And then off of that, another one is body fat levels. Right. So higher levels of body fat can mess up your hunger levels, right? So again, this kind of goes back to the movement. It's like too much movement will increase hunger, but too little movement will increase hunger. Well, it's the same thing here. Too high of body fat levels can increase hunger, right? Where it, but then also being super lean can also impact your hunger levels, right? So from a, you know, this is where like things like GLP-1 have been super helpful for people who are overweight, right? They just kind of have this like, you know, I used to be in this the mindset of, oh, they, you know, you just got to willpower your way. You just need to eat less. Like you just need to do it. But you know, as I've learned more, I realized that, man, people who have higher body fat levels, their hunger and satiety cues are just all out of whack, right? Everything's just kind of messed up there. So again, that's where the concept of higher body fat levels can impact you. But like I said, being lean is also something too, where I'm sure, have you competed before? Are you
I have not
okay?
competed, no, so I don't know what it is like to be at those extreme low body fat, but I've certainly heard how much of the food noise you like literally just have around you all day long. But I did actually speak to someone who went on yeah, I think it was semaglutide or whatever, but one of those GLP-1 antagonizers essentially. And she just said, like very successfully, and she's like tempering the dose down and stuff. So she the way that she just described it was that someone turned down the volume on the food noise. And I think that's a really great way to put it. It makes it paints a very illustrative picture for people that like us who can't relate to that perhaps. And so instead of constantly someone whispering in your ear, eat that, eat that, eat that, it's like switched off for a little bit and like, oh, maybe have some food. And then it's switched off again. And then, oh, maybe have some, you know, so more healthily regulated. But yeah, I love the tips you've given us in terms of hunger. So making sure we're kind of in the sweet spot for the right amount of activity, the sweet spot for, you know, not dropping body fat levels too low, but also understanding that if they're still too high, that we might experience more hunger focusing on whole foods, managing our stress, managing or getting our sleep in as well. But one thing, as we were talking about the gum and so on, it got me thinking of another question. I'm sure you also see a lot of people make mistakes when they track their food. So, like this client of mine who was not tracking her gum, which I mean, if you have one piece a day, by all means, don't track that. That's fine. But if you're eating 3 packets of something, then please do track it. So yeah, I certainly and anybody who starts tracking is going to experience some mistakes. So for the first, I think almost 2 years that I started macro tracking, I was doing it completely on my own. I just heard about it from a friend, and so. Probably the first year, I was only logging things in like medium apple and a cup of rice and whatever. Like it just, I still saw improvements because it was better than not tracking at all. And but at some point, I realized, okay, I want to fine-tune some things and I switched some things. But yeah, what would be some food tracking mistakes that you see?
Yeah, no, I love this because this really shows up in like, hey, I'm eating like 1200 calories, I'm just not dropping weight. It's like, what's going on? It's like, okay, you might actually be doing that, but you have to be careful with kind of how you frame this too, because I think a lot of people are like, well, I'm tracking everything. It's like, look, it's not anything you're doing. You just have to understand that, tracking, it's not an exact perfect science, right? We know that we log our food labels can be off by up to 25% plus or minus, right? So you already have that. Weighing out your food is a pain. It can get, we have a ton of other stuff going on. So, that can be an issue as well too. But at the end of the day, I always just try to just let clients know, hey, like this is a skill, and if you're new to it, it's going to take some time to develop. And there's even research to back this up. I usually try to like go to the research here to just be like, hey, this isn't like just a you thing. I'm not calling you out and saying you're doing anything wrong or purposely trying to do it. But in the research, they show that I think it was like women, they were like saying they were eating 1200 calories and not losing weight. And then they used doubly labeled water to see how much they were consuming. And some people were off by up to like double, right? They were off by up to like 20, it was like 2400 calories. So basically they doubled their calories. So just understanding that, look, we're going to overlook things with that. And so as far as like tracking mistakes go, I'm looking at, you kind of mentioned this, serving sizes, right? That's a big one. Are you just kind of labeling it as like medium, or are you actually like weighing it out? So I think that's super helpful to make sure you're at least for a period of time weighing your foods out so you get a better idea. And especially if you are actually trying to drop body weight, this is where I think you would need to be a little bit more rigid with it. So just doing that, and then you can always kind of recalibrate yourself over time if you're finding that things aren't trending the way you want. So looking out for your serving sizes. I think Dr. Spencer Nadolsky always kind of he posted this picture of it, and it was a good visual representation of this, where it was like basically two meals together. It was the same meal, and one was like 500 calories and one was 750 calories, and they basically looked the exact same. Like if you're just looking at it, it's like, oh, that's the exact same, but it was off by 200 calories. And I always tell people this, that it's probably not that 250 calories that is why you're, stuck or whatever it may be. It's if you do that multiple times a day, multiple times a week, that's where it's going to start to add up. And then I'm going to go over a few other things here that you start to see where it's like, oh, hey, I think I'm eating 1200, but I'm actually, eating way more than that. So that's a big one. Your serving sizes is a big one. Another kind of like common culprit here is like meals out at restaurants. This is one where it's really dependent on who's cooking that day, what the chef puts in there. So even if something says it has 500 calories, the likelihood of that when you go out to eat is very unlikely. And I think the big kind of culprits here are the like butters and the oils, things that you're not really gonna like notice, right? That can easily add a ton of calories in. So meals out at restaurants. So I think with that, if you are somebody who's tracking and you're not seeing the results you want, say it's in a fat loss phase or whatever, you kind of have to have that tough conversation of like, well, maybe I need to kind of back off of how many times I'm going out to eat, right? Maybe have a few more meals that you can kind of control there with that. We also have
Sorry, I was just gonna throw in there because I do. I personally I eat out frequently since I travel a lot, but I also work with a lot of people. They just say like, "Hey, I have business lunches. I cannot, bring my Tupperware to my business lunch where I'm trying to score a deal or whatever." But this is certainly a point where just experience comes in big time. So then I do say the meals that you do eat at home, please make sure you're weighing out everything very, very accurately so that your eyeballing skills get better. And oftentimes those people that I work with, they also, they might be in Dubai or somewhere. And so there, they might not display the calories as nicely as they do in many American restaurants. And but as you said, even there, it's even just because it says 500, it was probably George, a high school student or whatever, who's just helping out on the weekends, and he's not going to care whether that was a heaped tablespoon or a tablespoon of sour cream. And so therefore your calories do add up. But the biggest mistake that I see when people estimate their meals eaten out is that they really don't account for those oils, exactly like you said, or the butters. They're like, well, but I asked for no sauce and grilled. Yes, but what do you think they marinated that meat in? Or what do you think there is on the grill? On the grill, they're going to put some oil so it doesn't stick. If have you ever watched a professional chef or someone on Netflix, they put on like a half a cup of butter on a piece of steak so that it tastes good. Like literally, of course, it's not always the case, but overestimate for those oils, and just become a bit more or develop a little bit more of a keen eye and to see like, is this glistening? Is it not glistening? What does that taste like? After a while, if you're used to a lower fat diet, you will actually be able to taste if something has more butter or oil on it or not. But of course, initially, that is a super, super easy mistake to make. Of course, maybe not during a business lunch, but otherwise, if you're eating out, I do encourage my clients to like send me a picture in the first few weeks of tracking if they eat out, just so I can be like, oh, actually, you didn't log those sunflower or something seeds on the top of it. You didn't log the little sour cream thing because people just don't take that into consideration if there are 20 different things on their plate.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point too about like, the skill aspect of it. It is a skill, and this is where like again, developing other skills and bringing that, to this can be super helpful. So like for example, if you are eating out regularly, it's like really slowing down when eating. You may have to leave if you're actively in a fat loss phase, you may have to leave that meal, not actually finishing everything and like leaving that meal, feeling like you want a little bit more, right? These are some small things we can do. And I also want to point out too, I think it's important to also like set the expectations of like, look, this is only a problem if it's a problem. Like, if you are somebody who's trying to see fat loss and maybe you feel like you're eating low calorie, you're not seeing results. It's like these are things that, you just kind of have to be honest with yourself and look at. Whereas if things are trending in the right direction, it's like, don't make something a problem that's not a problem either, right? Like we said, we just want you to be aware of what could potentially happen here with that. So yeah, eating out is a big one, and that's one that can just add a lot of extra calories without you really realizing it. Like you said, the butter and the oil is a big one. You don't really notice that either. Like you said, you could get good at being like, okay, there's definitely a ton of oil on this when you're eating, but when you're looking at it, I guess you could see a ton of oil, but it's not really going to add a ton of like volume to the meal, so you can't really tell that there's a lot of extra calories there. So a few other ones, and the eating rate's a good one too. Sorry, this is how my brain works. The eating rate's another good one in terms of managing hunger too, right? Eating quicker, eating distracted, that's another one. So just kind of one I wanted to add to that. But some other kind of tracking things to look out for would be like condiments and like sauces. If I'm looking at a client's food log and they're maybe not seeing the fat loss results that they want to see, and I'm looking at their food log and it's like, hey, they had chicken, broccoli, and rice. I'm like, okay, that's good. This is a great choice, but it's like, are you cooking that with anything? Or you're having any sauces, right? Like, how many people do you know actually just eat chicken, broccoli, and rice? It's like usually we're having some sort of sauce with it, or we're throwing some sort of oil on it or something like that, right? So looking at that, and again, looking through clients' food logs can be helpful to kind of point that out. But again, it's not like, oh, hey, because I didn't log my barbecue sauce, that's why I'm not losing weight. No, it's because the barbecue sauce with the not weighing things out, with just kind of winging your serving sizes, like those are the things that are gonna, these things start to add up. Another big one is kind of like you said, snacking and grazing. We talked about that. Like, if you're kind of snacking and grazing throughout the day, you can kind of forget that you did these things, and those can, add in some extra calories throughout the day. So, being careful with that. And usually those are the types of foods that people are going to be more likely to omit from their food log is, these kind of tasty snacky type foods as well too, whether they do it on purpose or an accident. Supplements can be another one too, another kind of source of like kind of sneaky calories as well too. So if you're taking a good amount of supplements, you definitely want to look into that and see if, for example, like a big one, I recommend fish oil to most people. That's usually going to come with at least like 20 to 50 calories, you know, per serving. And so, like I said, that 20, 50 calories is not what's causing you to like plateau or mess up, but it's again in combination with everything else, where it starts to add up. And then drinks, right? I think alcohol in particular is another one that people kind of overlook. They just think that like if they have say like whiskey or like a kind of hard liquor or like wine or something, they think that it's like really low calorie and it's not really going to add any calories. But those are things that can certainly add up over time. And I always tell people with the drinking, it's usually not the calories that you have when you're drinking, it's what you do after you're done drinking and later on that you see a lot of calories start to kind of add up there. So those would be like the big kind of tracking mistakes that I see made. And that's where people end up kind of thinking that they're eating, say, 1,200 calories, but really it's a lot more. I always like to go there first before being like, hey, let's drop your calories, because usually there's something off from that standpoint that could be improved before just like, hey, let's just kind of drop your calories, you know?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that it's the accumulation of several multiple small things most of the time. I was going to just add to that chicken, broccoli, and rice, as you said, like sauces that we might add even if it's sugar-free or whatever, and definitely often overlooked. But sometimes, or one thing back to the oils, because a lot of people use the cooking sprays at home. And again, this is like a super minute detail, but this cooking spray, it'll say 0 calories, but it'll say 0 calories for like a quarter of a second spray. Who in the world sprays for a quarter of a second? Most people go like
Right.
5 seconds later, and by that time you have 10 calories or whatever it might be. But still, like if you're stuck, if you've hit a plateau and you think you're logging very accurately, again, like think about every single little thing. This could just be one of those things if you're using it 5 times a day and your eggs and your lunch and your dinner and whatever else. But yeah, just wanted to add that little thing there. But I want to make sure I'm respecting your time, so I just have one last question for you. In general, when people come to you and they say, I've tried so many things, but my body composition isn't changing, what is one or the most common reason why it's not changing? Is
What's
it training, nutrition, both?
yeah, man, that's a good one. You know, I think in most situations, so if their body composition's not changing, I do think that it does. I do think it comes down to their nutrition more times than not, but there is a subset of population where it's like the training could be off, but I don't think it's necessarily you need to do more training, right? I don't think that that's necessarily the answer, but I do think the nutrition one is one that people commonly overlook. You know, if they're struggling, again, it's usually something to do with nutrition, whether it's one of those things we mentioned. But one thing I do commonly see as well too, to go off of this, is if someone's body composition is not where they want it to be, I also find that it's partly because they haven't spent enough time, you know, they're just overly focused on the fat loss side of things, right? So making sure they take some time to eat enough. Again, I don't think you necessarily need to be in a like massive calorie surplus, but making sure you at least eat enough, like I would say around maintenance. And if you're somebody who's always tried a fat loss diet, anytime you've ever been in like fitness and it's like, hey, I've only fat loss diet, that's always my only goal, I think you can get a lot out of like going to your maintenance and really spending time there, working on all these things we talked about today, and really lifting weights to, you know, build some muscle. I think can really go a long way here. That's something that I feel like people kind of overlook. They're just overly focused on the fat loss side of things. It's like, well, I'll focus on the muscle later, or you know, or I already have enough muscle, I'm good to go. And it's like that's a big mistake that I see made from that perspective.
Well, Jeff, I think this was a wonderful take-home message for everybody listening. I will absolutely make sure to drop all your handles in the show notes, but maybe you want to shout out your podcast as well, which I'm excited to be on next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to having you on. That'll be a great conversation. It's weird. I've never really done this before where I come on yours and then you come on mine. So, but I'm looking forward to picking your brain on a lot of things. But yeah, my podcast is the Mind Muscle Connection podcast. It's on all major podcast platforms. And then, you know, Instagram is where I'm most active. So, you know, if you ever have any questions or anything, you know, definitely reach out there. And again, I really appreciate your time and having me on today. It was super fun. I love talking about this stuff. So thank you again.
My absolute pleasure. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jeff. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go. If you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening. And don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.